Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Spillers After Show podcast. I am one host, Brian Dunn.
I am your other host, Robert Hookman Jr.
And what we're doing here, it's just what it sounds like. It is a dissection and discussion of the most recent Spillers, which is an original short fiction reading event in our very own Phoenix, Arizona. And our most recent one, it was Spillers number 2, Robert. It happened earlier in November.
It was on back in November 2nd at Crescent Ballroom in beautiful downtown Phoenix.
Yep.
Crescent Ballroom is one of our favorite places. They have a lovely little lounge in front that holds about 50 people, and we keep ending up with standing room only in that little joint.
Yeah, the place was packed. We had a very talented lineup of writers. It was a lot of fun. And you just told me today that we are booked now for Spillers Número 3.
Número 3.
Yes, I like the sound of that.
It's booked for February 1.
Awesome. February 1, 2016. Mark that on your calendar. And we just decided that the best way to kind of talk about what happened at Spillers 2 is to talk to the people who actually participated in it and made it happen. So we have one of those very talented writers I alluded to earlier. His name is Ryan Myers. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Ryan read his story Out of Time. Robert and I both read that before he read it, and we both liked it immensely. He's a copywriter and a screenwriter, and he loves a good pun, I understand. Is that right?
It's true.
All right, very cool. Well, welcome to the Spillers After Show podcast, Ryan. Happy to have you.
Happy to be here.
So, as far as your Spillers 2 experience, I think that you went to the first one, right?
I did.
You were in the crowd. You liked what was going on.
I did, and I said, I want to do this.
I believe you accosted me.
I did.
After the show.
I did.
And
I held you down. And
you beat me soundly about
that. I did that whole spit line thing where I kind of hovered it over your head and threatened you with that.
With the what?
The spit line. You ever had, like, older cousins or siblings that did that weird, like, spit line thing from their lip and hover over your face like
they
spit
hang
on you.
Over you and the
weird dribble.
And they do that?
I had far crueler cousins than you did.
My sibling relationships were very well mannered.
See,
yeah,
it's
very very considerate. So I have no idea what you're talking about, but now I do.
That's its technical name, the spit line.
I don't know. It sounds good. I mean, the spit line.
If you've coined that, I would move to copyright
and
trademark it somehow.
As soon as we leave here, I'm going to do it on my phone, walking out the door. Spit line.
Spit line.
So there was a spit line that got you involved in the Spillers.
Yes.
Yes. I would have said yes anyway. Even without that, we don't have to resort to such shenanigans.
This is how writers feel about Spillers.
It's true.
Absolutely.
That's my takeaway from this.
I wanted it so badly that I was willing to spitline you.
You were willing to do anything to degrade yourself and me.
Yes.
And so you and Brian work together, yeah? That's how you heard about Spillers in the first place?
We do.
Yeah, I invited him to the first one, and he really dug it, and you submitted the story that you ended up reading as well.
That I did, which I was a little worried about because I know that you guys don't want really sci-fi stories, but I kind of hedged my bet in that it was a sci-fi story, but it wasn't really like, that wasn't the point of it. It was just kind of more of a sci-fi was a vehicle for it more than anything else, so...
Yeah.
I winged it, and hope for the best.
You winged it. Now, I noticed you started in the middle of a sentence.
Yes.
Right? Isn't that like a James Joyce? He did that, did he not, with the Dubliners?
He did.
Was that Finnegan's?
And I've been told many times to never, ever do that.
To never, ever do that. And you just said...
I didn't do it anyway. That's fine. Rules are meant to be broken, right?
Who's been telling you that? I think it's a great idea to start in the middle of a sentence.
Yeah, especially this type of story. Yeah.
Well, just kind of like, you know, writing classes, you know, growing up and stuff like that. They kind of try to steer you away from more outside-of-the-box stuff like that.
So anything unconventional.
Yeah, pretty much.
Professors don't like good writing.
Maybe. Right. That's quite true.
You know, it had to work that way, though, because your story kicks off, like, in the middle of the story, and then you have to backtrack. So
right.
You absolutely earned that. And I'm actually working on a story where I plan to end in the middle of the sentence.
Nice.
So, well, maybe someday we'll read them together.
Actually, maybe they could connect.
Yes.
How great would that be?
I'll go first.
Perfect.
That is.
We'll just see how they balance.
So, do you like the sci-fi genre then, in general?
I do. I mean, I wouldn't. I would say I probably read more kind of traditional fiction and fantasy more than sci-fi. But I think for something like this, it just was kind of a natural fit for the mechanic that I was going for, which was just to be kind of bizarre and manic and
yeah.
whatnot. Seemed like the most natural way to do it.
Yeah, there were some bizarre elements for sure.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
did you have any fear about maybe the audience not being able to like catch everything that was going on? Because you packed a lot of stuff in there.
Well, there's I think, a couple things. One, I tend to speak really fast anyway, which probably doesn't
You're speaking
help.
Fast right now.
I'm sure I am.
Yes.
I'm sure that
it's not just because we're short on time.
Slowed down later and transcript provided so people know what the hell I'm actually saying. This is, in fact, English.
Right.
But so no, that's part of the problem, but also just, again, starting in the middle of a sentence and just how weird the story is, I think, like, it kind of takes people a little while to understand what the hell's going on. And then they were a little more comfortable, like, laughing at some of the bits. Because I think at first they were like, is this supposed to be funny? We don't really know what's
right.
happening.
They weren't really sure.
It's supposed to be funny. It's fine. So, yeah, so I was a little worried about that, but I think it went over pretty well.
Yeah.
It was funny. The laughs definitely landed.
Definitely.
They were coming consistently throughout the reading.
Yeah, which would actually make sense because you write and perform stand-up comedy as well.
That I do. Yeah. I am fueled by laughter.
You
So talk a little bit about the kind of the message of the story, the theme of the story, or themes of the story, and how the sci-fi sort of supports that.
Well, so the big... What this ended up being essentially was an inspirational piece, really, which and it was supposed to be kind of masked at that. So, for most of the story, you don't feel like you're going to get the feel-good message at the end. But when it wraps up, it's basically go outside of your own box, go ignore your boundaries, and go do something fun and exciting. And again, then sci-fi being fantastical is kind of the best way to approach that, anyway. And then the funny part is when I first came up with this idea, it was supposed to live in a kind of like a modular way and like almost like a fiction scavenger hunt. Like it was going to start on WordPress and then go to Tumblr and have people like leaping through all these places. And I still may eventually do that.
That's a cool idea.
Especially with the whole kind of message in a bottle theme running through it. Anyway, when I was into for Spillers, I realized it could actually work really well as a live read. Just had to make some tweaks and move stuff together, and cut here and lift there and give it to Caitlyn Jenner. But then it
wow.
it worked out pretty nicely.
The Caitlyn Jenner.
Caitlyn Jenner.
I wonder if you could have had multiple people read different chunks of it, right?
Probably, yeah, actually.
Have people just randomly pop up around the room.
That would be really fun.
That would be interesting.
That would be really fun.
That would be.
Let's give that a shot sometime.
Yeah.
We'll have you back.
Well, all right.
Yeah, and we'll work out the stage direction. That'll be key.
We'll find volunteers for you.
That would be awesome. I'd be totally down with that.
Plant them around the room.
So, given that normally with stand-up comedy you memorize something and then you go out and perform it, did you feel like, having the papers there was a safety net? That it was too was it too easy for you to do it?
No, I loved it because when I do stand-up, I'm always paranoid that if I bring notes up on stage to do stand-up that I'm going to end up looking at them and break my rhythm. So I force myself to memorize it and rehearse it a million times. And so it was so much nicer for this.
You don't pull a Janine Garofalo then, right?
No, I do not.
I understand it's no. kind of infamous for doing that.
It was much, much easier having the paper there. And I think, I had read it so many times that I still, like, it was kind of half memorized, I guess, so I didn't have to, like, read off the paper the whole time, which is right. nice. I just kind of glanced down when I needed to, but it made it so much more comfortable just to go up and just relax and do it instead of all being worried about, like, what's the next bit and have they laughed long enough before I go.
Right. Have I milked
and
this joke?
When I do stand-up, it's part of the problem is, again, I talk fast anyway, but I never leave a big enough gap for people to laugh.
Okay.
Because I'm so worried that I'll forget the next bit that I just keep...
You just have to plow through.
Yeah, just like, I'm just gonna go
rapid
until I'm done.
Comedy.
Sure,
so it was
sure.
nice to be able to let it breathe a little bit.
I hear commas are good for that. So in your bio, it says you can pry his puns and Oxford commas from his cold, dead hands.
Yes.
Tell us about your attachment to Oxford commas.
Well,
one which I shared deeply.
I don't understand why people don't use them, and where we work now, we cannot. In fact, it is in the style guide to not use Oxford commas, and it is... A source of great pain to me.
Just it is in your style guide not to use them. In the style guide that I have, we use them.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's just cruel.
It is cruel. And whenever we have to write something for your side of things, we end up not doing it. But for all of our stuff, we use Oxford commas.
I'm envious. I'm envious of your freedom with commas.
You can be one of us if you want.
I may jump ship.
Okay.
Solely for the Oxford commas.
Just on that alone.
But
you're easy.
There is no professional style guy that condones them, right? But well, it's mystified.
I think there's
like
but,
Chicago doesn't, AP doesn't.
Well, I think AP does. I think that's how it breaks down. Because I know Chicago doesn't, and that's what I use most of the time. You know, even going up through the copywriting ranks. But I think AP does, and I think that's why.
That's why they're such rival factions.
Yeah, and I've gotten like really aggressive, heated, drunken arguments about the use of the Oxford comma.
Well, sure.
And it's like, why would you not?
Actually, that is a question that my 8-year-old daughter, I kid you not, brought up just the other day. She knows to use an Oxford comma. Her teacher says not to, and she said, "Dad, is Mrs. S wrong?" And I said, "Yes, she is wrong, and you are right." And continue to use that.
Daddy, why don't we use the Oxford comma?
We do.
Tough conversation. No one wants to have that conversation.
They grow up so fast.
You want to wait till they're older before you really take on the tough issues like that.
The innocence is getting stripped away.
Well, and another name for Oxford comma is obviously serial comma. So serial comma to serial murderer. There's an easy leap there. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
I've never heard that argument advanced, but I like it.
That's how angry I can get. I'm not saying I am, in fact, a serial killer. I'm just saying, were I one...
Has anyone ever told you that you have the look of a serial killer?
Well, but like a handsome one, like a charismatic one.
Well, you have to be somewhat charismatic to lure the victims.
That's true. That's true.
You do have to lure them in somehow.
Yeah, they do say that Ted Bundy was quite the ladies' man.
Quite handsome.
Sure. So it helps. That's all I'm saying. So, with the whole sci-fi thing, are there sci-fi authors that you read regularly, or?
Not really. Aside from kind of just like the traditional good old sci-fi works of like, you know, Bradbury, and Byrne, stuff like that. Otherwise, I mean, I read a lot of Neil Gaiman. I love Neil Gaiman stuff. He's my favorite author by far. But he's kind of traditional fiction and fantasy.
Right.
So I don't know why it was sci-fi was where I leapt. But,
yeah, that's just interesting.
It just felt like such a natural fit.
It's just where this one needed to live.
And I think, I mean, I watch a ton of sci-fi, like stuff like Firefly and, you know, Star Wars, stuff like that. I mean, you know, Battlestar Galactica, all that. Grew up with all that stuff.
Sure.
So I think TV is probably where the sci-fi sits in my soul.
Sure. So is TV and movies, those are kind of a big inspiration for you, or you get a lot of content ideas
lots of Netflix,
from that.
Lots of Hulu, lots of. I mean, that's I'm always watching a screen, and I know that's not the best the best thing in the universe, but I love it, and I play a lot of video games.
Okay,
I exclusively play video games that are big story games. Like I very rarely play first person shooters and racing games and sports games. I play the stuff that's gonna take you 140 hours to complete.
Oh my gosh.
Because I just love those crazy narrative threads you can build that way.
Wow. Now, haven't you said that you've actually written a game? You've written the story behind a game?
Yes. I can't say much about it yet.
Oh, no, no, no. I wouldn't have you divulge any.
Pre-development. But yeah,
sure.
It's actually a really neat thing to do because you get to build these. You know, it's like writing a story. You're building a world. You're building backstories. You're building.
Yeah.
You're building this narrative. But just the weird thing about it is when you're writing a traditional story, you know this is what's going to happen. But when you're writing a game, you have to be ready for all these branches. Like if A happens, then this is what unfolds. But if B happens, then this is what unfolds. So it's really hard
to
wrap your brain
around.
Choose
your own adventure.
I was going to say, it's like a choose your own adventure, but it's a hellish one.
Right,
because it seems like it could go in a million different...
Yeah, based on what the character chooses is what part of the story unfolds. And it can like branch off different ways depending on the actions they take. So it's...
So you must be organized.
No, not at all.
How? I mean, I'm envisioning like 3x5 cards like on your ceiling.
Because I
ransom notes and mind maps and things like that.
Yeah, weird shit. Yeah.
I'm disorganized. I have a million different docs open at any time while I'm working on it. And I just trust the people that I'm sending it to.
Do you?
To have to deal with what goes where. And so far, they haven't stabbed me. But
well, that's good then.
They may eventually, as it gets bigger and bigger.
Right.
But I mean, they kind of set up the organization for me a bit. It's all just, you know, kind of shared in the cloud. I'm like, here's all the buckets these things need to go into. So I just need to pour words into the buckets because they pulled me off organizational detail pretty fast. And they were like, okay, you can't handle this at all. You're no good at this. We'll just tell you where to put things, and you write things there.
Let's play to his strengths. Words in buckets.
Yes, that's
what we must do with him.
The grand prize game strategy of,
so your first
of writing.
So your first novel would just be pages with paragraphs in each one? Just one paragraph?
Pretty much. Like House of Leaves. It's just this weird shit all over the place.
They may or may not relate to each other.
Right. You know, I'm writing that day.
If you liked this paragraph, turn to page 82.
So Robert brings up a good question. Do you have a novel in you? Is that one of the projects that you're working on?
I think I do. I think that would be a very difficult thing for me, only because I tend to bounce around so much and have, you know, a million different projects running at any time that. But by that same token, you know, when you get on a roll, you can do something for 8 hours and just pluck away at it and love it. So I think that's what it would be. I think it would probably be one of those things where once I had an idea that I knew I would really want to make a novel out of, I would probably spend 2 years writing a sentence here and there, and then like one weekend where I'm just like, boom! Then it would be done. I'd be like, all right.
It's like a compressed NaNoWriMo in one weekend.
It is. That's for whatever reason.
Send the wife and children away.
that's how I tend to work for some strange reason.
Really?
And even at work, when I have deadlines, if I have 3 weeks to do something, I'll spend 2.5 weeks occasionally visiting it. and then the day it's due, it's like, all right, let's rock this thing out. It's not even a procrastination thing necessarily. I mean, it is literally procrastination, but it's not like I'm half-assing it at the end. It's just that's when all the work comes out for some strange reason.
I work the same way, actually, and I think it's you spend that first 2.5 weeks sort of it's cooking in the back of your mind for a lot of that time, and you're just internalizing it and making sense of it and organizing your thoughts and getting progressively more stressed out about it. And then that last 3 days, you're like, I'm on.
Yep.
Let's go.
I would agree.
And it just all pours out, and it's nothing.
Probably not the most efficient way to work, but...
Well, but it is a way to work, and it's working for
it
you.
Works. Yeah. Gets the job done.
That's
so
fantastic.
It's Parkinson's law that work fills... Wait. Work expands to fill the time allotted to complete it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you give it 3 weeks, and it's actually only going to take you 3 days, you're going to take 3 weeks.
Yeah, makes sense.
But only use that 3 days. So if you gave yourself a much tighter deadline, you might actually, like, just crank it out.
Nah. I don't like that. Tighter deadlines frighten me.
Then it would be 2.5 weeks late.
Yeah, probably. I told you I needed 3 weeks for this.
Well, we really enjoyed having you at Spillers 2. Really loved the story. Loved the way you read it. We'll work on the multi-reader angle, possibly for future ones.
Nice.
Yeah. But, appreciate you showing up for the After Show podcast. Very, very fun to talk to you.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right.
Thanks, Ryan.
Take care, Ryan.
Adios.
So thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Spillers After Show podcast. We enjoyed having you.
To find out more about Spillers, check out our Facebook page. It's Spillers PHX. That's Spillers Phoenix.
And if you are inspired to submit to be part of the next Spillers event, please go to spillers.net.
And you can check out the podcast website at spillersaftershow.com.
And a special thank you to our sound guy, Steve Wiesenthal.
A special, very special thank you to Crescent Ballroom. And to Southern Rail, who's been kind enough to host our podcasting recording sessions.
Absolutely. All right, thanks, everybody. We will see you soon.